Hey guys, just wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening to Sidebar Forever. If you like the show, please subscribe to us at sidebarforever.com, as well as share episodes of the podcast on your social media. That way, new listeners can find us as well. Today's podcast is a throwback to the great What If and Elseworld comics of the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. We're talking alternate reality stories of Batman teaming up with Harry Houdini, Superman as a Soviet agent, Jane Foster finding the hammer of Thor, and Iron Man as a traitor. You see, for fans like us, what blew our minds about these stories wasn't simply the out there nature of these ideas, it was the infusion of real consequence and change into familiar characters who often remained in stasis. So, in the conversation, we reminisce about a few of our favorite What If and Elseworld stories and have a few laughs, especially when discussing a classic all-star issue of Marvel's What If, number 34 to be exact. And hey, what are some of your favorite What If and Elseworld stories? Hit us up on our socials and let us know. And as always, thanks for listening.
Good morning, Dr. Silberman. How's the knee?
Did you just have a brain fart?
I know Taekwondo.
Stop eating my sesame cake.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Fuck with me, and we'll see who shits on the sidewalk.
Come quietly, or there will be trouble.
Clearly, I wasn't talking to you, big titties. You cherub-looking motherfucker.
While you were still learning how to spell your name, I was being trained to conquer galaxies.
The real question is, what are those?
So let's set the stage for the listeners who were not there in the 80s when What If and Elseworld stories were being published.
Okay.
And this is actually something I wanted to do when Dwight and I talked about Epic Illustrated and Heavy Metal. But in the 1980s, you could walk into a comic shop and you see like just rows and rows and rows of four-color goodness and long boxes as far as the eye could see, and magazine racks and toys and action figures and, you know, just all of it. And in the late 70s and throughout the 80s and the 90s, Marvel and DC started publishing amongst Superman, Batman, Justice League, X-Men, New Mutants, Moon Knight, Wonder Woman, and so on, they started publishing these odd one-off stories that would feature all of their characters, but in many cases, also to their flagship characters.
Mm-hmm.
And these stories would diverge wildly from the regular continuity, but in a really good way, in a cool-ass way.
Right.
And oftentimes, I always thought, I'm not sure what you guys think, but the writers and the artists would push the boundaries and color these characters outside of lines. You know, there would be, the stories would be much, in some cases, much more dramatic and moving. There would be unalterable change, consequences for actions. There'd be death. Heroes would walk away from their calling. Villains would win the battle, like, for good. Like, villains would be victorious.
Right.
And I always thought that, you know, that What If and Elseworld stories, they offered, like, creators, you know, as fans, we loved them because, you know, it was a chance to see these characters in a new light. But it offered the creators of these stories, you know, a chance to, you know, to move these characters from, and I think we talked about this in our text exchange, but from stasis and from non-change into change.
Right.
You know. And that was probably really exciting for them as creatives. It was definitely exciting for us as readers of these comics. And as our friend Thomas Perkins would say, the comics of our youth.
Nice.
I was going to say, you know, with there is a difference between, you know, the What Ifs and Elseworlds. You know, yes, they both, you know, deal with, you know, stories that diverge from the continuity, but also, you know, they, especially What If, you know, its biggest strength was it dealt with established continuity, you know,
And so it would take, you know, stuff that everyone knew as canon, you know, like Gwen Stacy mm-hmm. was dead. Phoenix was dead. Uncle Ben was dead. And it would say, well, what if Gwen Stacy had survived? What if Spidey had saved Gwen Stacy? What if Phoenix had lived?
Right.
You know, so that was part of the attraction too, you know, of seeing like, oh, wow. Not only are they, you know, taking this continuity and doing something different with it, it's almost like they were given license in that instance to really, like you said, Swizz, to make the stories a bit more sanguine in terms of, wow, you really can't. They went for the jugular on a couple of those, more than a couple, you know? But the difference with Elseworlds was that, you know, it kept the continuity of Superman crash lands. Bruce Wayne's parents are still shot. Wonder Woman comes from Paradise Island. But within that context, you had all of these other stories, you know, that would spring forth from that. They even had one called Speeding Bullets, where, if I recall correctly, it was Clark Kent's parents are killed, so he becomes a flying Batman. But the bat is actually inside of that diamond crest, you know, stuff like that, to where they don't change the continuity of the character's origins, but they do something different with it, put it in a different context, you know. So it's almost like you could choose which one, you know, kind of suited your fancy. Like, what if it was taking established continuity and really just saying, well, what if this happened instead, you know, whereas Elseworlds was like, here's a whole other reality for these characters, for these flagship characters, you know. And whereas DC dealt mostly with like their big three, or maybe their other, like, you know, Justice League characters, those big seven, Marvel integrated all of their characters. Like, all of it was fair game, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so that stuff was a lot of fun when I was starting to discover it when I was in my teens, because Wizard Magazine, as always, you know, would sometimes bring those up, you know, those issues, those past issues of What If, you know. And there was still an ongoing series of What If too when I was getting into comics in the early 90s. There was a second series of What If, and that obviously was definitely the weaker of the two, by far. But
of course it was. I mean, I don't know, man. My thing is this, man. To your point, the thing of Marvel always did so well, man, is they really, really, they grounded you in a world that was so intrinsically real initially, wherein it wasn't like friggin' Gotham City. It wasn't like that's a real place, but this wasn't like Metropolis. It was New York City. There were consequences. There were the moon, you know, the blue part of the moon. It was, you know, because you're thoroughly ensconced in the overall idea of what the characters are living, then you really allow yourself to be brought into the moment where that existed. And having taken one of my favorites, as you alluded to earlier, about the Phoenix saga, what if Phoenix had lived, you know, and taking that pivotal moment where she makes a different choice, or choice taken away from her,
mm-hmm.
that totally allowed the fans to kind of live vicariously through what happened afterwards, you know, because that whole story, you know, that took place, it meant a lot to a lot of people. So for them to redress it from a different manner, and saying, yeah, well, you know, what if she didn't make that choice? What if she actually lived on? What would happen then? I think that was a pinnacle moment for that whole series for me.
To Adrian's point, What If was published, the first volume was published from like 1977 to 1984.
Yeah.
And then there was a second volume, I think, from 89 to like 90-something, late 90s.
That's right, yeah.
And then they brought it back again around 2006 and have kind of published What Ifs off and on as weird one-shots and here and there, kind of ever since then.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Elseworlds stories, which were formally published between 89 in 2003, and then they came back like maybe one time, I don't know, 2010, something like that. They published another one. But one of the things about the Elseworlds stories, and maybe this has something to do with like the legacy of some of these characters. So the Elseworlds stories were kind of birthed out of the silliness of the Silver Age in a way. You know, these kind of dreamy, hoaxy kind of stories that they would do where, you know, Perry White smokes like a kryptonite cigar and gets superpowers, or,
wow,
you know, Lois Lane gets superpowers from a blood transfusion from Superman. We don't know how she got the blood out of him,
right?
But weird things like that, that I loved as a kid reading, you know, reading those comics. Mm-hmm. And they were considered imaginary stories or dreams. And then, you know, eventually, like Adrian said, you know, you have these formal stories that are being told later on in the 80s that are actually set in another time or in another period or on another Earth. And DC was known for, okay, there's Earth mm-hmm. 1, there's Earth 2, there's Earth X, there's Earth this, you know, mm-hmm. there's a Superman over here, there's a Superman over there. You know, they were big on yeah. that. But I wonder, and what you guys think, that maybe the differences in approach and the differences in how they would skew the continuity or how they would skew the canon or how they would repurpose the character in a different setting, if some of that had to do with the fact that, you know, so many of the Marvel characters were so much younger than the DC characters. And the DC characters, you know, some of them go back to the 30s and the 40s. And you know, a lot of the Marvel characters started in the 60s. So they didn't have quite as much life as the DC characters did. I wonder if that had any play to it at all.
My take on that would be that I think that it's just that they were, to me, I think they're more, like, Marvel seemed to be more driven by editorial than to me, as far as editorial than DC did. And I say it, no slap to Julius Schwartz. I think he was a great editor, you know. But I mean, you know, Jim Shooter, he ruled with the Iron Fist back in the 80s, dude. So he was all about, you know, popping that whip and making sure that everybody was on the same page and getting mm-hmm. things out in a timely manner, man. So I think it was a thing wherein, you know, they had more conscience and more focus on the grander goal, which is, you know, let's make sure everything is somewhat integrated with these different editorial staffs and things like that. And, you know, there were snafus, there were problems and stuff, but, you know, one of the things I always liked about Marvel, and I sound like a real Marvelite right now, but I guess it was, that's the case. I mean, I read more Marvel than I did DC. But I think one of the things I liked about Marvel was that they seemed as though they were always trying to make sure things were leading from one event to the next and not, like, having to reboot or do any kind of crazy reinvention of their legacy characters. Wherein DC was like, after Crisis, they were like every other freaking year, seemingly, oh, that didn't work enough for us. Let's make this little caveat storyline that's going to reinvent the world again. Oh, that didn't work. Let's try this again. So, I kind of lost interest in all that because I started seeing, all I was seeing as a collector from a young age was like, okay, I knew I liked number ones. I knew number ones were a great thing. And I knew that there, to them, was a marketing gimmick and that they were shoveling in these number ones just to get you to the comic book store to buy more material. And I was like, no, I'm past that. I'm over that. So.
Well, another thing I was going to mention was, you know, with the Elseworlds, you know, a lot of those weren't meant to be, and it didn't come until later that you had a couple of them that were miniseries, like two or three issue prestige format joints, you know what I'm saying? But most of them were meant to be standalones, mm-hmm. you know, whereas your What Ifs, there was a series of them. Now, they would be, you know, done in ones, you know, that particular issue, I'm talking about the What Ifs, but you know, it was like, well, another possibility will be out next month, you know, and then a month after that. Whereas with DC, with the Elseworlds, it was like, you know, those prestige formats, those one shots, you know, square bound with the cardstock cover, it really made it feel special, you know. So when you got those, it did have that air of, just like the format states, prestige to it. Like, oh man, this is going to be a cool story. There were some times where it wasn't, though, but there were other times where it was, like, very, very memorable, you know?
Yeah, the some examples of What Ifs. Some of these are my favorites and some of these are not, but you have What If Conan had, you know, walked amongst modern day.
Yeah.
Like Adrian mentioned, What If Gwen Stacy had lived, or What If Spider-Man had saved Gwen Stacy? What If Kraven had killed Spider-Man? was one that they did. What if Spider-Man? I think the very first What If was What If Spider-Man Joined the Fantastic Four?
Yeah, yes.
You've got What If Daredevil Joined S.H.I.E.L.D.? What if Elektra had lived? What if the Avengers fought evil in the 50s, which is one of my favorites?
Right.
What if the Avengers had never been? What if Jane Foster found the hammer of Thor? And then, of course, the ultimate, what if the Invaders stayed together after World War II? God damn!
Woo! Woo! Gotta get that James Eager ball right there.
Yes, y'all.
Can you woo, woo, woo?
Oh, man. Hey, Swizz, as an honorable mention to that, in that first series of What If, man, I got to mention my favorite. Believe it or not, I mean, that first series got some joints in there. Like the sweet spot for that first series of What If is like from about counting, you know, issue number 4, of course. That's a joint right there. Then you get to like issue 27, whatever issue that is with Had Phoenix Lived, on through to about 33.
27.
Thank you. So 27 to about 34, that period right there is such a sweet spot. Dig it. 27, Had Phoenix Lived. 28, what if Matt Murdock was an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.? I forget what 29 was. But the one I'm getting to is there was a hilarious, absolutely hilarious issue, an all-comedy issue of What If, and it was issue number 34. Search that out.
Uh-oh.
I'm telling y'all listeners, search that out. If you want a good-ass laugh, something that will give you some belly laughs, and it's with an all-star cast of creators. I mean, you had Byrne, Simonson, Miller, Bob Budiansky, like all your Bob Hall, like everybody, the whole bullpen. I mean, it was just a cipher, yo. And they was just all chipping in. And what was cool was they would chip in with a like a one pager dealing with their particular character that they were known for. So it was what if Daredevil was deaf instead of blind. So he's beating up these crooks, and the crooks are trying to tell him, no, I didn't do it, huh? What you say? That type of thing. Oh, it's hilarious. And then the other thing that made me laugh out loud was, what if Luke Cage had found the hammer of Mjolnir? And it was like,
Mjolnir.
Thank you. It was, what if Luke Cage had found the hammer? And so you can have Cage in the Thor costume, like, by the gleaming gates of Asgard. It's so hilarious. Like, all those sight gags work, and it's based on, like, established, like, continuity. Oh, another one with Luke Cage. What if Luke Cage was white? And this is one panel, and it says, oh, I am one funky honky.
Oh, my God.
Seriously?
Yes. And then, and I'll mention one more from that, but the whole issue is hilarious. There's one pager, and just like Snowblind that John Byrne did in Alpha Flight, there's a panel that's all white, and on the side it says, what if Snowbird, White Tiger, just all the characters who are known for being in like white costumes, what if they all fought in a snowstorm? And it's just the all white panel. And then the second panel is what if Black Panther, Black Bolt, all the characters that are known for black costumes, they fought in the dark? And this is the all black panel. So stuff like that, it's just hilarious, man. It's just cool. So I definitely say, man, search out number 34, but definitely along with some of the other ones that we're going to mention as well, man. So
I think the one What If issue that really threw me, and I'll preface this by saying one of the things that made What Ifs different was that the title of the comic was The Hook.
Yes.
You had to have an enticing hook that would make fans want to know and want to read and want to turn the pages. And after a while, they did get a little outrageous and silly, but The Hook was always in the title. But the one that they lost me on was What if the Marvel bullpen became the Fantastic Four?
Yeah, yeah, like that joint joke.
As a kid, I was like, what? Who are these people? I see Stanley. I know Jack Stanley and Jack Kirby. Who wasn't it like Flo yes. and somebody
Flo
else?
Flo Steinberg, yo. Yes, sir. Yeah.
I was like, what? I mean, it just seemed, even for my young, you know, 14-year-old eyes, whatever they were, it just seemed a little definitely self-indulgent where they were like, okay, let's just see if these kids will go for this shit.
Man, but yo, man, I mean, you gotta talk about later on in the run, like that sweet spot I mentioned, y'all. I mean, shoot, get into what if Phoenix had lived, man. I remember getting that when I was like 14, so this would have been 94, you know, and, you know, the issue had obviously been published like 10, 12 years prior to that, you know what I mean? And I was like, wow, because I was just getting into like John Byrne's Uncanny X-Men, reading it, that stuff for the first time, and, you know, it hit me, so I'm like, what if Phoenix had lived? What the? Okay. So, man, I remember about that, man. Damn. It was a cool ass story, and then I remember it just got like real dark at the end. I mean, she was she was dragging Nightcrawler into the fire because she had set Colossus on fire or something like that. And Nightcrawler was like, "Why are you doing this?" She was like, "Get your ass in this fire." like somebody was trying to run away and she ended up dragging. That's what it was. Nightcrawler was trying to escape. He's like, "I don't understand why you're doing this." And she's like, "Uh-uh, you're not going anywhere." And she did something else to Wolverine. Like, she basically just decimated the team, like, in a manner that would have never happened in the regular comic. It would have been too bloody. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It was like, wow.
I don't remember that issue. Was that Byrne and Claremont and Byrne?
No. It was somebody else's art on it.
Yeah, it was like Jerry Bingham, if I'm not mistaken.
The art was palpable. The art was good, but it wasn't X-Men 137 good. You know what I mean?
Nah. Okay. It was. It definitely was not Byrne. No. But the cover, though, was by Frank Miller. By Frank Miller by himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And as it relates to the Elseworlds stories, and I mentioned again, they were all kind of birthed from that Silver Age, you know, some of the oddness of the Silver Age comics, you know, and of course Silver Age DC, you know, we get like Streaky and Crypto, and you know, we get a lot, you know, even the Legion of Superheroes. As much as I love the Legion of Superheroes, the way they introduced them and that goofy looking clubhouse, it was all just like, okay. You know, either with DC, you either had to be into it or you were not into it. You just had to go along with it. Okay, Superman is going to fight a gorilla.
Right.
You know, Batman is going to do whatever. He's going to drive a Corvette in this decade, and then the next decade he's going to drive something out of the 30s. You know, yeah, whatever it is. But the first official Elseworld comic is Gotham by Gaslight, which was published in 1989, written by Brian Augustin and... illustrated by Mike Mignola.
Yeah.
But Batman Holy Terror is the first one to feature the actual imprint Elseworlds.
That's right. Brayfogle. Yes, sir.
Our former guest, the late great Norm Brayfogle, and written by Alan Brennert. But I always thought, and this is why I guess it's maybe a twofold question, and I'll throw it to you, Adrian, because, you know, you tend to have an encyclopedic knowledge of this stuff, having worked in a comic shop as you have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering about the occasions where a what if story or an Elseworlds story actually became part of regular canon. That's one. And then two, like in my mind, to some extent, like Alan Moore's For the Man Who Has Everything would fall in the vein of one of these stories. I mean, did that actually happen in canon, you know, with Mongol and Batman and Wonder Woman and all that?
Yes. Yes, the Alan Moore story was in canon before, because I think it was just prior to Crisis, the very first Crisis. So, yes, so that was in continuity, you know, with Mongol and everything.
Okay.
And then, in answer to your other question, yes, part of that did become canon for a while. It may still be. And the the example I'm going to use is that Kingdom Come is now considered an Elseworlds.
Yeah.
I remember that DC really started angling, like in the early 2000s, they really started angling. They even came out with a series called The Kingdom, which I believe was not considered an Elseworlds, but still spun off of Kingdom Come, which was. And they were trying to angle it such that, yes, this stuff is in canon, you know, yes. And this is a picture of the future of these characters, a possible future, you know what I'm saying? Beyond that, not really. Even though you had some that were very intriguing, you know, they just never became canon. You know, like I'm thinking of the big popular ones, like, you know, the Batman Dracula trilogy, you know, Red Rain and Bloodstorm and all of that. Superman Red Sun, immensely popular. Oh my goodness. Are you kidding me? Oh, so many. And it's almost like they stood as their own, just their own, you know, prestige formats, you know. And aside from Kingdom Come, I don't think in my memory that any of them crossed over into being canon. It was just more like, these are just standalones. These are possibilities, you know.
Obviously, you know, Batman Houdini couldn't, you know, the Devil's Workshop, that couldn't be, you know, introduced in continuity. And Gotham by Gaslight is completely like, you know, something that's, you know, kind of dreamed.
Right.
But, you know, some other Elseworlds stories that I remember, JLA, Riddle of the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman, Amazonia.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Which was kind of like her version. Kind of like her version of Gotham by Gaslight in a way, because it was set in the Victorian age, wasn't it?
Yeah, and art by the wonderful Phil Winslade, man. Man, that book was beautiful.
Son of Superman, and then Green Lanterns, Green Lantern, 1,000 Emerald Knights.
Yes.
So, but they all kind of did their thing, and I think, man, we were at a place where everybody really was, and, you know, Stan has set it up like that, you know, as far as Marvel's concerned, for everybody to really be, like, hardcore about the continuity, and this happened in that issue, and that happened in this issue, and, you know, and he would, you know, put the annotations in the comics, you know, mm-hmm. go back to this issue if you want to find out about this story and this reference. So Stan Lee really did kind of create the continuity cops, as they have become known, you know, those hardcore fans.
Yeah.
But the other thing, I guess, like, for instance, Adrian and I know you and I are big fans of, you know, the What If and the Invaders That Stayed Together After World War II.
Ooh.
And I was rereading it before I dialed you guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just, it's in the same way when I was a kid, it was so moving and so horrifying.
Yeah.
And so sad. And for it to be a comic about World War II, you know, there were definitely times in reading The Invaders where you did get a sense of the weight and the gravity of the war and the loss of life and the extinguishing of the Jews.
Yeah.
And the American lives that were lost and the Polish lives and the English and the French and everyone. But that story to me really hung heavy on my shoulders, where I was like, you know, like Steve Rogers dies and then Bucky dies and then, you know, the spirit of 76 takes over for Captain America.
Yeah.
And Fred Davis becomes the new Bucky. Fred Davis. Yeah. What was up with that
just
name?
Just some Joe, yo. Fred Davis.
Look, it sound like a brother, yo.
Yeah, yo.
Like, but, you know, they took over as Captain America and Bucky. And then, you know, you move through time and it's like, you know, Harry Truman and, you know, you eventually get to Jack Kennedy in the 60s.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Adam, the second, you know, Professor Horton's second attempt at a synthetic human being.
Yeah.
And then the android ends up crushing the ribs of the Spirit of 76 as Captain America, and he dies.
That's
on that
right.
Tower, like on some One If By Land, Two If By Sea shit. And then, at the end of the story, Captain America shows up and freaks out Adam the Second, I think it was called. I forgot what his real name was.
Uh-huh.
And he crashes his car into a wall, and he takes the mask off, and it was the Patriot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whom we had been introduced to earlier. But you know, just all of this death and all of this loss, it was really heavy to me, you know, to my young 14-year-old brain or whatever, however, you know, old I was when I first read that. But mm-hmm. I mean, did that hit you that way, man, when you really got into it?
You know what really hit me, Swizz, was, you know, obviously you had actually read that first run, you know, versus myself. I came to it much later, you know, just being a little bit younger. What helped with the weight of that story is how dense it was in terms of not just you really felt the weight of the continuity, and not necessarily in a bad way, but in a good way. Like, you felt like that there was a heritage going on here.
Right, right.
You know, but also, man, that joint was that joint was 40 pages. So you got, like, how they used to say, a novel length epic.
Yes.
Giant size.
So right? Yeah, man. It just felt like really you were getting a solid story. And then you have, and then obviously Roy Thomas wrote it, who's like perhaps the ultimate mm-hmm. continuity cop. You know what I'm saying? So you knew he wasn't going to steer you wrong.
Yeah.
If Rascally Roy didn't know about it, it didn't happen. You know what I'm saying? Roy.
Yeah, yo.
So you just had all of those things colluding into like a very special issue that really still to this day, as you attest and as I attest and, you know, many people who have read it attest, that issue just really stands the test of time because of those elements that are in there. And moreover, you know, a lot of those issues of What If, the great ones, the better ones, stand that same test of time due to the fact of, you know, the premise was so intriguing and it was executed so memorably that, you know, you can't help but go back to it and still feel, you know, the same when you read those stories, man.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, man. You're right. I was thumbing through, you know, What If Matt Murdock Had Joined S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh.
That, oh. Which is a gorgeous book. I think Mike Barr wrote it with Frank, and then Klaus Janson inked it. It's a gorgeous story.
Oh, man.
And this is peak Frank Miller. Peak.
Yes.
Peak Frank Miller.
Yes, that peak Miller Janson tea. Like they it's like they took half a month off and said, let's just hook this up right quick, Klaus. Let's hook this up. And just off.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, it's like Jordan and Pippen, man. It's like
yes.
I mean, just peak.
Yes.
Peak.
Oh.
You know, and but the very first story in the book is and it's one of those ones that makes perfect sense to tell. What if Ghost Rider was separated from Johnny Blaze?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, where they took the two characters split apart, but Johnny Blaze was still somewhat haunted by Ghost Rider, mm-hmm. you know, in the story. You know, he still couldn't escape, even though he was physically different from Ghost Rider. He couldn't escape, you know, the demon. Mm-hmm. But I want to throw one that back at you guys, and starting with D, but I want to talk about Gotham by Gaslight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One, I think that was the perfect story to launch Elseworld as an imprint, not an official imprint, but as an idea. It seemed, I remember the first time I saw that book, I almost thought, well, surely they've done this before. They've done this already.
Right.
Like, it just seemed like a very natural thing. But I think the other thing for me as a fan and as a novice artist was, that was the book that made me say, oh, man, Mike Mignola is that motherfucker.
Right. Yeah.
He's that motherfucker. And, you know, it was inked by P. Craig Russell.
Yeah.
And just like the elements of it just came together perfectly. But I wanted to ask D about that because, D, you had mentioned that in our text exchange.
Yeah, man. I mean, for me, that was the most memorable Elseworlds for me. You know, being a man of limited budget, as I was telling you back then, at that time, as we were joking back and forth, it was real. I saw a lot of different comics on the shelf, and I was like, okay, which ones do I really, really want? Which ones can I really, 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 really get? And that was one that I chose to get because it was the graphic nature of Mignola's artwork was so strong and so sweet. I was like, man, I have to have this, you know. And then when I looked at it, I was like, okay, the nature of the Gaslight, as I was, you know, somewhat, you know, understanding of what that was, you know, the Gaslight nature of technology at the time.
It meant a lot to me. It was like, well, or at least it, the way he approached it was awesome, because, you know, Mignola had a very strong, you know, not as strong as it became, but it still was a very, very, very good resonance of what he became later on with the Chiaroscuro style. Mm-hmm. You know, this is going to be all black, it's going to be all white, and this is going to be, you know, and I like the idea of, you know, even as much as I poo-poo Batman sometimes, I like the idea of legacy characters, like carrying on from generation to generation, and how this Batman was a precursor to the Bruce Wayne one, in a lot of ways. So, yeah, man, it impacted me. I mean, I was like, wow, okay, this is super cool. Let me get this and see what's really going on with it, you know?
I'm gonna make an admission, man. It's one of the rare books that I have never read.
Really?
Yes.
What?
I know. Dun, dun, dun.
Wow, yo.
I have never read Gotham by Gaslight. I've flipped through it, but I have never sat down at length and read it from cover to cover. For shame, I know.
Wow, man.
It's so funny.
It's highly unusual, right?
Yeah, it is, because I've read a bunch of...
I knew ye not.
But I've read, like, a ton of other Elseworlds. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of stuff around it, but I've never read Gotham by Gaslight. And I can just see now, I'm going to have to hang my head in shame when this episode comes out amongst all of our boys. Because they're going to be like, dog, dog. That's all they're going to be saying, dog. Yeah. For real? Dog.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is the truth, and the fact that, you know, they incorporate kind of, you know, like a historical fiction in it, where he's you know, he's dealing with Jack the Ripper,
yes,
in Gotham, you know, and even with, you know, what Chaykin and Moore and Chiarello did by having Batman meet Houdini, you know, and Houdini obviously being an influence on the modern day, you know, Bruce Wayne. But, you know, having them be in an adventure together, I just thought all of it was just crazy cool. But one thing I was noticing flipping through my what ifs, and I know we're jumping back and forth from what if and Elseworld, but your boy the Watcher, Uatu the Watcher, yo, he came off like a cosmic Rod Serling, yo. He just stepped out of the shadows.
Imagine a world where
I am the Watcher. For a millennia, I have been watching shit, you know. I half expected him to be smoking a cigarette like Rod Serling used to be doing back in the day.
Yo. Now you know what's funny. Speaking of the Watcher, speaking of Uatu, in that What If humor issue that I mentioned earlier, that number 34, Terry Austin does a one pager of the Watcher watching himself to infinity. Like, it's just like the panels grow smaller and smaller and smaller, and then it's like the Watcher watching himself and watching this panel up here and watching him, and it's all him, so he's always watching himself, you know.
yeah I do actually remember that part. I do actually remember, yo.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about in our text exchange about, you know, and again, you know, they've kind of done what ifs. They've continued to do them. Elseworld stories, not as much. And they're actually, Marvel announced that, you know, there's going to be an animated what if television show.
Disney Marvel.
Yeah, on Disney, excuse me. You can see excerpts of it online, but that's going to be interesting. But I wonder, because we were talking and we were of the opinion that what ifs and Elseworld stories probably would hit different today than they, you know, they did when we were kids.
Very much so.
One, because I think lots of writers, and this was a point that I made in our exchange, lots of writers and artists are doing things today that back then was radical to these, you know, these flagship characters.
Right.
They're, you know, they're swapping the genders and the race and the sexual preference, and, you know, they'll make someone a Skrull, or they'll put them on another planet or in another dimension, like, you know, Planet Hulk or things like that. And all that is a part of canon now today. Like, you know, and then what was the thing that you mentioned, Adrian, when we were talking?
Oh, just, well, I think the overarching point that I was making was that, you know, the strength of particularly What If, I mean, both What If and Elseworlds deal with established continuity, but in particular, What If, that was its strength, was, you know, take these elements from canon and twist the possibility of them. And my concern is if, like, What If stories would, you know, hit differently today, like what you're intimating, where, like, those stories, all those storylines that you just mentioned, had you done those back in the day, it would have been like, wow, it would have blasted your brain. Cause it's like, wow, they actually did that even for one issue. But today they're like whole summer events. They're mega events, you know, many issues and everything, as opposed to like just having that one issue or so forth. So it almost deals with like established continuity. But when there is no continuity now, there's no continuity now, you know. You can go back and cherry pick, you know.
Right. Like even I think another thing you brought up too is, you know, is so many of these characters in these series will relaunch with a number one, mm-hmm. you know, every however many years. I don't know how often it happens. So there is no continuity to bank off of. There is no continuity to say, hey, what if we skew it and did a sliding doors thing and took this character to the left, to the right, instead of straight down the middle?
Right.
What could really happen? That doesn't happen anymore. I think the only thing that remains true and steady in comics, and for decades now, maybe, 70, 80, 90 years, however long, you know, proper comics have been around, is nobody dies forever and stays dead.
Yeah,
yeah, right. But what about,
you know, Steve Rogers was dead for what, 2 years, and then they brought him back, and now he's a Skrull. You know, who knows? You know, what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, you know, that there are some absolutes, but they are getting fewer and fewer. I mean, really, the only one who has stayed dead, Joe, is Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even when Aunt May died, they brought her back numerous times. She was at death's door, and I guess death said, "No, turn your ass around. Not yet.
Right.
Got more wheat cakes." But yeah, I mean, all of it. Phoenix is back. Phoenix has been back for several years now. What, even longer than that? Ugh. I mean, 2 decades. You know, whenever X Factor started up again.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know what I'm saying?
Electra came back.
Right.
Yeah.
They brought Bucky back.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Did Captain Marvel, did Mar-Vell come back?
No.
Mm-mm.
Not Mar-Vell.
Yeah. He's actually stayed dead.
So he's still dead. Okay. Okay.
Okay. All right. Wow, they gave respect to cancer. What in the hell?
But not the name, because the name is all I'm really concerned with, because it's all about the IP. You know what I mean? Because if they let it lapse and somebody else gets a hold of it, they can, you know, then really be it really will be a true fight between, you know, Captain Marvel and Marvel proper and Captain Marvel or Captain Marvel.
Oh, Shazam.
Or Captain, no, Shazam. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you try to keep that going, so that nobody can, you know, claim rights to it fully. Holy.
You for a what if, I say specifically for a what if to work today, you would almost have to do, like a reverse what if, like, okay, what if Phoenix stayed dead? What if Bucky was still exploded on the side of the airplane with Baron Zemo?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if you know, all these characters, you know. What if Mar-Vell came back to life? You know, what if they chemoed him and he came out, you know, and he, you know, you'd almost have to go into the reverse. But that's pretty sad. But
it is. All the bridges have been crossed, man. It's like you mentioned, man, earlier, there was one I was reading about, I think I saw it in passing probably when I was a kid. I just wasn't really with it. Was what if Rick Jones was the Incredible Hulk?
I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, isn't he like a version of the Red Hulk or Blue Hulk,
exactly,
or some shit?
One of those, not the right color. Yes, you are absolutely right. And not only that, General Thunderbolt Ross is a Hulk too.
Yeah.
So it's just like,
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. It was huge.
Oh my God.
In like my last couple of years working at the comic shop. Oh man, the storyline was big. Like Red Hulk, the Blue Hulk, and then that whole saga was like crazy. But again, to your point though, I mean, it's getting fewer and fewer, you know, far between, you know, the possibilities that you could take these characters and make, you know, really good, convincing what ifs, you know, and right. just people yeah. are not so yeah. wedded to continuity anymore that they're just like, all right, just give me a story. How about that? Just give me a story, you know?
Yeah. Would you guys consider the story Marvels by Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross to kind of be Marvel Comics' version of an Elseworlds story?
No.
No?
I was just going to say Alex Ross is too wedded to continuity. He is a stickler for continuity. In fact, if you look in the annotations for Marvels, he even breaks down, well, I took this from this comic. I took this panel here because they had to be here because they weren't here. And it's just like, damn, Alex, chill. I mean, the story is great, but it's more like a celebration of the canon instead of alternate, you know, reality of it or an Elseworlds. You know what I'm saying? Because it definitely takes place within within the canon.
But what about the Universe X and Paradise X and all that stuff? That was a departure for him then, if that was the case, because they were definitely him and Kurt Busiek. Was it Kurt Busiek that was writing it?
No, that was Jim Kruger. Yeah, but see, those are two different ones. They're not in the same realm. Like, Marvel's is its own thing, and then you had Earth X, Universe X, and all of that. That's its own thing. So yes, the Earth X and those trilogy of books definitely could be what ifs, you know what I'm saying? Because it diverges from canon, whereas Marvel's stays strictly within it, you know?
Okay, gotcha.
Okay. So likewise, you said Kingdom Come is now a part of canon now, right? It's part of the continuity?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially from the television side of things. I mean, if you look at what they did with the Crisis crossover on the CW, they definitely brought all that into Forbear. So yeah, sure.
And I think they even called that crossover Elseworlds, if I'm not mistaken, right? Didn't they call it like the Legends series, or the Legends series that was on CW? Didn't they call that Elseworlds, like whatever that event was?
I think it was just called Crisis crossover or something like that. But it could have been. I mean, could have been like a subheading. I didn't read because I didn't watch all of it anyway. So. But yeah, man, I was making a point too in our exchange about the whole thing with and to Swain's point, why they probably wouldn't be as successful as they were back in our day is because of the way, you know, writers are now stepping up to the plate and writing stuff that's like really, really fantastic stuff, man. I mean, I can't give enough shout outs to Jonathan Hickman, man, with what he's done with the X series, man. I mean, he's ripped the lid off that, man. He said, ripped the scabs and all that. He's like, hey, this is brand new. I'm going to take all this and everything you thought you knew about it. It's this plus that. And I'm going to tell you why this was good and why that doesn't work. And this is the new continuity. And this is what it's going to be from this point going forward. And it's like, wow, I take it. And as a longtime X-Men fan, and I swallow it as a longtime X-Men fan.
Wow. Yeah. Last question, I guess, is I don't know if you all know, but I'm wondering, if you don't know, why do you guys think that these big publishers decided to go in this direction, you know, back in the late 70s and the 80s and tell these weird offbeat, these one-off stories where, again, it was like Sliding Doors, where they would send a character through a different. Why do you think they wanted to tell these stories or to take Superman and set him in a different time, or Batman or Wonder Woman or Justice League? Or and like what do you think birthed this idea, you know, to try this as opposed to staying with what was, you know, working monthly?
Well, I think for What If, you know, definitely it was just at the base level, man, market share. You know, here's another magazine that we can put on a rack. Here's another comic that we could put on a rack, you know. But at the same time with that, it was like, hey, and here's the thing that you have to realize also is that when What If first started, man, the talent that was on there was like the regular all-star talent. Gil Kane, Frank Robbins, Frank Springer, Roy Thomas, John Buscema. So they weren't Jack Kirby. So it's not like they were slacking, You know what I'm saying? On those early issues of What If and even on through that first series. You know what I'm saying? But it was just like, man, let's put our regular great talent on these alternate stories. And you can kind of see the talent react to that because, you know, oh, wow. So I get to have Captain America act like this in this one issue? Okay, bet. Shoot. Okay, cool. And you can see them kind of dig in to that concept and really bring that stuff out, you know. Same thing with Elseworlds. You know, one of the artists that it's like they reserve like a secret weapon for Elseworlds is Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. That man right there,
yes,
they would bring his ass out for Elseworlds, a Superman Elseworlds with a quickness, dog. Man, I'm like, so with DC, it was more like it was a prestige format thing, obviously. But it was like, man, not only are these going to be standalone, but these are going to be special, too. You know what I'm saying? Again, to take the market share away from another Marvel book that month or whatnot, you know. And also, you know, they would get royalties on those, too, because they were those standalone square-bound books. So if those things were selling... Mm-hmm. Royalties were involved as well, you know, at least for the Elseworlds, you know what I'm saying? And just yeah, it was just something different, the possibility of something different. And I think as much as there is such varied and different and fantastic and not so fantastic, you know, in some cases, material that is out there today, you know, from the big two, mm-hmm. just these types of stories really brought to the fold of like, why are these characters so rich? Not only can we do regular stories with them, but we can also put them in totally different scenarios that you didn't even think about, and they still work. You know what I'm saying? That's the strength of those characters when they're done by a creator, by a writer and artist or whomever, you know, who are really invested in it. You know what I'm saying? And I'll say this. Mm-hmm. I'll say this to close out that thought. You can tell the difference between the first series of What If and the second series of What If. The second series of What If started out kind of strong. Mm-hmm. They were using established talent. But then eventually it got to be like an inventory title. You know, like the concepts were weak and you could tell that the talent was not invested in it. Like, for instance, in that second series, What If, second series number 50, What If Wolverine had killed the Hulk? I had been looking forward to that all my teenage life, man. I remember seeing it in Wizard. And then when you would go to the comic book store, it had this foil cover and it was like a $10 or $15 book. So I couldn't afford it. Jeez. Well, I finally got a copy of it when I was older, when I was an adult, man. And wah, 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 wow. It's like the story was just like that. The story should have been half the length of the issue. I mean, we're talking about 40 pages here. What? And it's almost like you got the feeling that the writer had to fill out all 40 pages unnecessarily. It's like, oh, what? This is so terrible. This is terrible.
So let me
go ahead.
Let me guess. I haven't read it before. I was when it first came out, I was like, I wasn't interested in it because I'm not really been a serious Wolverine fan by himself, and I like it when he interacts with each other. I like it when he interacts with other people because it gives him like his impetus to do what he does. Mm-hmm. But I was interested in revisiting that. But let me guess. So you had Department H, and you had Vindicator, and you had most of Alpha Flight in it at some point. To, you know, buttress what he did. Am I right?
No. And that's the terrible part, D. That's the bad part. It didn't have none of the elements in it of that. None. Wow. It's like Wolverine and Hulk fought, right? And Hulk actually kills Wolverine, you know? And then the X-Men show up.
Okay.
What the hell are all y'all showing up for? Oh no, is he dead? Is he dead? And then Wolverine comes back to life and with one last mighty swing of his claws, he fells Hulk. And then Hulk goes on like this vision quest. Do you bring in Native Americans who turn Dallas into like a wilderness? And then there's flying pterodactyls. There's an Indian. There's a Native American tribe. There's like, what? And then the X-Men have to fight this possessed Hulk. It quickly devolved into, what the hell is this? What are y'all doing? This would have never happened back in the day, you know, with the previous series of What If. Right. You would have the premise and you execute the premise. Why? Because you had a continuity. This was in the 90s, you know, when this was made. So there was still some continuity, but it wasn't as tight. You know what I'm saying? So there's a marked difference in between. Wow. Yeah, there's a marked difference, you know, from the creators, you know, about how they executed these things. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, don't look that issue number 50 up. It's not worth your time. Don't.
What if the creativity ran out?
Damn.
That's it.
That concludes this episode of Sidebar Forever, hosted by Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson. You can find us online at sidebarforever.com. Any emails or questions can be directed to us at sidebarforever@gmail.com. And also, subscribe to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Sidebar Forever is copyright 2020. Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson.